Chapter 14. The fog started to roll in along the shoreline as the five of us searched for a fishing boat that would be big enough to carry us across the lake. We stuck close to the tree line and tried to stay out of sight of the manor house on the other shore, but as the mist on the water got thicker, Ursinger's retreat became less distinct until it disappeared from sight. "How long will this last?" I asked as I scanned the edge of the water.
"Usually a couple of hours,"
Scourge said as he slinked from tree to tree.
"It's never exactly the same. We should hope that we find a boat soon, though, or else it might start to dissipate by the time we find the retreat."
"Are there a lot of people that live on the edge of this lake?" I asked as we continued to move.
"I don't think the Mad Chief would allow anyone to live within sight of his secret hunting lodge,"
the red-skinned woman replied.
"But I'm sure there is some brave sow who fishes these waters anyway. Even oppressed people need to eat."
"I think I see a boat,"
Nilame gasped. Up the shore about 50 yards was a small boat that was half covered with old branches. The fog had obscured the bank on the other side, so we were able to finally leave the forest and step out onto the rocky beach. The vessel was just a small rowboat that looked like it could comfortably carry four, but the dark-skinned Zinkari man narrowed his eyes as he watched the rest of us uncover the boat and push it into the water.
"Maybe one person should go back and see if they can quietly get over that wall,"
Scourge commented in a steady voice as he looked at the rickety boat.
"Make sure there are no guards in the dock."
"Are you afraid of the water?"
Bakoth asked as he climbed into the boat and took up one set of oars.
"Of course not," the Zinkari man said defensively. "In limited circumstances, it can be quite nice, but there's something about a large natural body of water that feels incredibly unhealthy."
"If you want to go along the shore and make sure the dock is clear, it seems like a good idea," I told the dark-skinned man as I tried to suppress a knowing grin. "I won't make you get in the boat if you don't want to."
"It has nothing to do with the boat,"
Scourge said with an indignant expression.
"Though I think it would be asking a lot of that dinky little boat to hold five people in it."
"It's okay that you're scared of the water, Skrello,"
Amrilla joked in a bantering tone as she sat down in the boat.
"We promise not to think less of you for it."
"You're all impossible,"
the horned man huffed and then started to walk away with his shoulders squared and his back as straight as a broom handle. I chuckled under my breath before I got into the boat as well and then used one of the oars to push us further away from the shore. Bakoth and I started to row together and found a decent rhythm pretty quickly, but it did take a few times to figure out how to sink the oars into the water without making a loud splash each time. Soon, we pointed ourselves to the southwest, where we knew the manor house would be, and started the long, silent journey across the water. Nilame sat at the front of the rowboat with a bow in her hand and watched for the shoreline of the manor house through the thick fog. Amrilla, on the other hand, sat just behind me and watched out back while the mohawked warrior and I sat with our knees almost touching as we pulled the oars back, up, and down again in smooth arcs. My brain was still on fire with the thought of the secret room Ursinger had made for Ibsith. That sick fuck couldn't convince his half-sister to sleep with him, so now he wanted to force her into committing incest. There was a part of me that wanted to burn the manor down, and the secret room with it, too, but even though this was personal for me, I knew I had to keep shit in perspective and not let my emotions get the better of me. As much rage as I felt, I had to let it run cold and help me focus, rather than hulking out and just destroying everything. Ibsith was safe and out of Ursinger's reach for now. If I played everything right, I'd be able to get the other Night Elf tribes to help me fight the Mad Chief and make sure that when he was dead and gone, some other tyrant won't pop up in his place. Then I'd just be able to explore the gloom, get super rich, and enjoy my life with my wives. We drifted across the eerie lake in silence while surrounded by the dense white mist. It felt surreal and almost like we weren't moving sometimes since there weren't any visual cues to track our progress with. But soon enough, I saw Nilame raise her hand and then the dock lantern materialized out of the fog. As the first few feet of the dock came into view, I saw Scourge start to lower the limp, bloody body of a guard into the water while he tried not to make any noises. Then, the four of us pulled alongside the dock. Amrilla grabbed a mooring rope and Scourge finished letting the body of the dead guard slip into the water. The body disappeared for a moment before it bobbed back up, and then I reached over and gave it a push with the oar to send it out toward the center of the lake. The dark-skinned man gave me a quick nod and then came over to help us with the boat. And once we were all on the dock, I looked around. I still couldn't make out the back of the manor house, but the closest outbuilding was just visible. The five of us huddled together while we kept a wary eye on the yard and walls of the retreat.
"There are two on the wall," the Zinkari man said as he pointed, "but they seem to be focusing their attention outward. And I think there might be as many as four in the yard. Two are patrolling the grounds, and the other two are guarding the door to the kitchen. There might also be some stable hands to worry about."
Okay. I thought about what I knew of the layout of the manor house and grounds. We want to do this as quietly as possible, but everyone should have their ear protection at the ready, just in case. Nyla May, Amrila, and I can wear ours, but you guys might want to wait to put in your earplugs until any actual shooting starts, or you won't be able to hear anything. We'll split up into groups. Skrelo and Bakoth will go to the right. Amrila, Nyla May, and I will go left, and we'll meet at the kitchens. Once we've secured the kitchen, we'll regroup.
"Then we shall see you in a few moments."
Bakoth grinned at me, and then he and Scourge quietly padded down the dock toward the retreat's grounds. I kept low and motioned for Amrila to keep an eye on the walls as we passed to make sure no guards were there to spot us. As we moved forward, I kept my eyes on the yard beyond the dock, and I waited for the back portion of the manor to come into view. I could hear occasional snatches of conversation or a cough as one of the guards in the fog cleared their throats, but it was hard to tell how close any of the sounds were in the fog. The ladies and I came up to the side of the wall at the end of the dock and paused to look along the curve of the wall. About 20 feet into the yard, right across from where we stood, was one of the big buildings. From the smell that came out of it, I guessed the building was the stable, but I couldn't hear the stamping of hooves or the whinny of any large animals. I idly wondered if there were horses down in the gloom as we moved forward and slipped around the back of the building, but I quickly shook the thought away and focused on the situation at hand. Then I heard the tramp of footsteps, and I stopped as I pressed myself against the cold stone wall. The women stopped and followed my lead, and we all listened intently to the footsteps. From the sound, I knew it was someone on the ground, and they were heading toward me. I wanted to get a look at them before I sprang to attack, since our goal was to kill any guards and try to subdue the servants. I inched closer to the corner of the building as my heart started to race. The last few days had all been building to this raid, but now that we were here, it felt like everything had happened in a flash. I carefully poked my head around the corner and saw a soldier in the light blue leather of the Yinni army as he swaggered toward me. The man fiddled with his codpiece as he walked, and he was clearly trying to get behind a building to relieve himself. I brought my head back and leaned back against the wall before I pulled the combat knife out of its sheath at my waist. Then I waited. Within moments, the guard came around the side of the building as he started to whistle to himself, and I acted with a speed that surprised me. I punched the soldier as hard as I could in the nose. The man lifted his hands to his bloodied face and looked around at me with a shocked expression. Before the surprised elf could shout or react in any way, I took a step forward and drove my knife into the side of his neck. The soldier made a strangled choking noise, and he weakly grabbed my hand before he crumpled to the ground. I helped to guide him down so there wouldn't be a thud of a body, but he was dead by the time he was on the ground. Then Nyla May and Amrila came up behind me, and the Zinkari woman kept her eyes on the walls while the Night Elf helped me grab the dead man's feet and carry him behind the stables. As we set him down in the blue-green grass, the Dolrath woman caught my eye and winked at me, and then she gave me an approving nod. I could tell she was impressed with how I'd handled the situation, and for just a moment, I got caught up in the exotic curve of her lips and her almond-shaped blue eyes. There was a hard edge to Nyla May's beauty, and it was breathtaking. But I couldn't think about that right now, so I nodded back before I stood and started back toward the back of the manor. As I came back up to Amrila, she quickly grabbed the combat knife out of my hand, took the tip of the blade between her thumb and forefinger, and then threw it at the top of the wall. I was shocked and about to say something, but then there was a thunk, followed by an audible groan, and a body fell from the top of the wall. My sassy wife turned to me with a wicked smile on her angular face.
Now there is only one guard on the wall,
she whispered between her sharp teeth. That's my girl, I grinned back. I'm proud of you. The beautiful half-demon woman blew me a silent kiss, and then we focused back up on our task. After we'd retrieved my knife and hidden that guard out of sight as well, we moved along the outer wall toward the manor, and once it was in sight, the three of us moved along the back wall. My heart was hammering, and I could feel the sweat prickle along my forehead. There was no way to tell when another guard might come out of the fog. The manor came into view, and the women and I moved across the open yard to hug the back wall of the retreat. From the map I'd gotten from Felpip, I was pretty sure we were behind the dais in the meeting hall. If we moved to the right, we'd pass the back of the dining hall and then to the kitchens along the rounded western wall of the manor. As the wall of the building began to curve, I knew we were close to the kitchens. I could no longer see the stables through the mist over my shoulder, but I could see the other back building. We slowed our paces until I finally saw an elbow in light blue armor that poked out around the curve of the building. I craned my neck to try to see more of the soldier the elbow belonged to, but all I got was part of an arm and the man's hip. But he was holding still, and I guessed it was the guard who watched the door to the kitchens. I looked around the yard for any other guards or a sign of Scourge and Bakoff, but I didn't see anyone else.
There are two of them by that door,
I heard Scourge's voice say in a conversational volume. The sound of the Zinkari's man voice startled me. He sounded like he had said it right next to me. I looked behind me, in case he and Bakoff had snuck up right behind me. But only the women were there. Nylame and Amrila stared at me with expectant expressions, as if they were waiting for my next move. But I was confused. The dark-skinned man had sounded so close, but I didn't see him anywhere.
Over by the outbuilding, Eddie,
I heard Scourge's voice say with dry amusement. Then I felt a small pebble hit my right shoulder. I looked over at the outbuilding to the right and saw Scourge and Bakoff peek out from behind it. But how had I heard the Zinkari man's voice so clearly?
It's just a simple demon's trick, Eddie.
I heard Scourge again and saw the dark-skinned man point to his head.
Don't worry. I can't hear your thoughts. I can just project my own.
Demons were fucking weird. I knew Zinkari could use some amount of magic. I'd seen Amrila do it once to save us from a swarm of huge spiders, but she'd been physically drained afterward, so I wondered how much energy it took the fastidious Zinkari man to project his thoughts into my head. I held up three fingers so the women behind me, Scourge, and Bakoff could all see me tick down one by one, and as I lowered my last finger, I pointed in the direction of the two soldiers by the door of the kitchens, and surged forward. I got to them first, and was able to shoulder the closest guard into the other before they knew I was there. The three of us stumbled, but only the guard who'd been on the further side of the door fell to the ground. I grabbed the first guard and pushed him up against the wall before he could reach for his sword. The soldier began to struggle and shout, but then Amriel and the others were there with me. Bakoth was on top of the other soldier, and he started pummeling the poor bastard like he owed the redhead 6 months of unpaid rent. Meanwhile, I took my combat knife and quickly jabbed it into the side of the struggling soldier before he could call for help, and then I pushed through the kitchen door. On the other side of the door was a large, round room with several work tables that were covered in food. A cavernous oven had a crackling fire burning under it, and large pots were boiling on hooks in the fireplaces. Something about the scene set off a warning flag in my head. Then I looked around and saw several night elf women in long dresses and white aprons staring at me as I busted through the door. I didn't know anything about running an old-fashioned kitchen, but this looked fully staffed to me. One of the night elf women found her voice and screamed, so I rushed to action. The other four of my companions came in behind me and started to shout over the terrified woman's scream.
Everyone down on the floor! I hollered. We're not here to hurt you. Once we have what we want, we'll leave. There's no need for anyone to get hurt.
Even as I said the words, I knew they sounded like something coming from a lame heist movie, but I guess it was a cliche for a reason. With Nylame and Scourge's help, I was able to calm the kitchen staff and get them to sit on the floor. The Zinkari man found some thick twine that we used to tie the ladies' hands, but just as we got them calmed down, Two elven men in nice tunics came in from the dining room. Bakoth and Amrila rushed to meet them with their swords already drawn, and then they forced the two men into the kitchen and sat them down.
"What on earth are you doing?"
the older of the two men demanded and allowed the red-haired Dolrath to tie him to the chair.
"Do you know who this house belongs to?"
"Yep," I said in a flat tone. "That's why I'm here." The older elf was an elegant man with a short, iron-gray beard, and I guessed he was the butler from his fussy air of authority.
"You're the vampire!"
the old man gasped.
"Oh, gods!"
one of the kitchen women whimpered as another just fainted.
"I'm not a vampire," I rolled my eyes. "And this will be over soon. Is there anyone else in the house? I don't have any interest in killing anyone but soldiers. Once I have what I want, I'm gone."
"If you're looking for valuables,"
the old man said as he scowled at me,
"they'll be in the master's private room upstairs, but there isn't a treasure hoard here, I can tell you that."
"What about a secret room?"
Bakov asked as he finished tying up the older man.
"You seem important, in the way that a man with limited power might. I'm sure you know all sorts of interesting things about the master."
"Why don't you just wait and ask the master yourself?"
the old elf retorted. Bakoth shot me a look from over the head of the tied-up servant, and everything clicked in place at that moment.
"He's here," I said in a quiet voice.
I stood, went over to the door that led into the dining room, and cracked it open. There wasn't anyone in there, just several large tables that were set with plates and drinking goblets. But there were already trays of fruits and flagons on the head table.
"Where is he?"
I demanded of the old serving man as I turned back to the kitchen.
"He and his generals are out on a hunt,"
the gray-haired man said as he glared up defiantly at me.
"They should be back before the mist dissipates."
My mind roiled with all the different possible outcomes. I could end this all now, just wait in the meeting hall and shoot him as soon as he stepped through the door. But if Ursinger had all his generals here, that probably meant even more soldiers were with him than the ones we saw here at the retreat. Even if I was able to get within range of the Mad Chief, he could have enough men with him to overwhelm us before we could put up a fight. "We'll continue with the plan," I said to the others, "just like we discussed, and try to be gone before Ursinger comes back. But we have to be fast about it."
"But we could end it now, partner,"
the horned woman protested.
"I know,"
I nodded as I looked at my wife. "But it wouldn't mean much if we all die. We could be in the middle of an army right now for all we know. It's better to just get what we came for and get out of here." I watched the wheels turn in my wife's dark eyes. She was a fiery woman and didn't really care for the concept of delayed gratification. If she saw an opportunity, Amrila took it. But we had to think about the big picture. And if she and I died in the gloom, Ibsith would be all alone on the surface with no idea what happened to us.
"All right,"
the Zinkari woman finally relented.
"Let's get this over with and go home."
I looked over at Bakoth and Scourge. The two men nodded and came to stand next to the door. Amrila and Nyla came over too, and I was the first through the dining room door. We silently swept between the tables and headed to the other side of the room, and I knew from the map that the next door should lead to the meeting hall. As a group, we combed the first floor and looked for any servants or guards. The long meeting hall had a lush, purple carpet that ran down the center of the room and stopped before the raised dais, but the space appeared empty.
"Should we search this room?"
Bakoth asked as he looked around the hall.
"I think we should focus on the upstairs in the basement," I said as I looked at the garish throne on the dais.
I don't think he'd keep a contract with a demon lord framed on the wall. The next room was the armory. There were rows of animal heads stuffed and mounted on the wall, and under the creepy heads were heavy wooden racks with swords, flails, and other various weapons lined up along the shelves. We passed by without much interest in the room, because the next door led to the stairs. As the four of us stood in the stairwell, Bakoth and Scourge made their way up to the next floor, while the ladies and I descended to the basement. The next floor had a strange smell I couldn't quite place. There was the usual musty smell of dust and damp, but there was something else just underneath that, almost like the carnal smell of a butcher shop, and my stomach flip-flopped inside me. As we came to the bottom of the stairs, there was a short hallway that seemed to L to the right, and the wall at the end facing us had a doorway. I pulled out the map from my backpack and looked down at it for a moment. I think that's the servants' quarters. I pointed to the door. Next to us are some holding cells. Let's look in there first.
If we're assuming the evidence we need is in the hidden room,
Nyla May commented in her quiet voice,
I don't think the entrance would be in the jail. Wouldn't he want it in a place where he could access it without being seen?
That's a really good point. I nodded. But if there's anyone locked up down here, I want to talk to them. Maybe help him out. The cellar was completely quiet except for us. But when we entered the jail, I almost gagged. The scent I'd noticed on the stairs was much stronger down here, and I immediately saw why. Every one of the shitty, straw-stuffed beds were stained with blood and human waste. But there wasn't anyone there.
Ugh!
Amrila retched.
Gods! Why wouldn't the guards clean this up for their sakes, if not for the prisoners?
It might be part of the torture.
The dark-haired woman replied with her hand over her nose.
Oh, this is disgusting.
After a cursory look around the room, the only thing of note were two chests in the corner. But all that was in there were some clothes and shoes. I assumed they'd been taken off the last prisoners who'd been held here. Some of the bloodstains were still bright red, so there must have been people held here recently. We left the jail and continued into the rest of the basement. The chambers on the far west of the cellar were set aside for storage. Crates and boxes were piled on top of each other, and I wasn't quite sure where to start. The three of us started to poke around, looking through crates kind of at random, but I felt like it was about time to give up and see what Scourge and Bakoth had turned up when something caught my eyes. Maybe it was the hypervigilance and the remaining adrenaline from when I'd fought the guards earlier, or maybe it was years of playing video games that made me notice some of the bricks on the back northern wall were a slightly different color. What's that? I pointed at the discolored bricks that were just visible behind a stack of crates. I moved toward them, and Amrila was just behind me as she came over to take a look for herself. I started to move some of the crates by handing them off to the Zinkari woman, and she stacked them off to the side. Eventually, a 6x3-foot section of wall was exposed, where the bricks were slightly lighter than the other aged bricks around them. That looks like a door to me, I said as I felt along the edges. But how does it open? I couldn't see any mortar between the lighter and darker bricks. But then there was a sudden grinding sound, and I just about jumped out of my skin as the newer bricks of the door began to move back. I looked around and saw my black-eyed wife as she smiled mischievously with her hand on a lever that had been hidden behind some of the boxes. You're very funny, I said in a sarcastic tone before I looked into the dark opening. Then I pulled the Galil out from under my cloak and clicked on the newly mounted flashlight. I instantly regretted it. The room beyond the opening was filled with torture devices. There was a rack with a dead night elf still hanging from it, and long tables with eviscerated bodies strapped to them. What the fuck? I nearly shouted as the horrors of the room were revealed. I could see there was a passageway in the back of the room, so I braced myself as I started my way through the grisly chamber.
The monster.
I heard the red-skinned woman growl just behind me as she followed. As I turned to say something, I saw my wife slip a large ring off the finger of one of the corpses. I love you, baby, I shook my head, but you gotta stop looting dead bodies.
I know, we're the good guys now,
the Zinkari woman said in a way that made it sound disappointing.
But I'm not looting. This is the signet ring of a nobleman who went missing. He helped to fund the resistance. It's proof that Ursinger is killing off his political rivals.
Fair enough, I said, and I tried not to breathe in the smell of rotting flesh and blood. Let's keep going. Further down the corridor, we found a large, round chamber that was filled with colorful silk pillows, a golden vanity table, and lush drapes on the stone walls. There were also golden chains hanging from the wall, right next to a bed made of large pillows. The sight was almost worse than the torture tables.
That sick fuck,
Nyla May said under her breath.
I had heard the rumors that he wanted to fuck his sister, but I didn't know whether or not to believe them until now.
Let's get a good look through here, I said as I handed my headlamp to the tall Dolrath woman. If there's evidence anywhere, it'd be here. We searched the round chamber from top to bottom. One chest turned out to just have silk dresses in it, but there was nothing in the drawers of the vanity besides perfume and scented oils. As the lady started to dismantle the bed and look through the cushions, I began to look around the walls and around the tapestries. Behind one, there was a hole that led into another room, and I shone the light into it. Oh, shit, I said aloud as I stared at a low table that looked as if it had been made into an altar of some kind. There was a large, red cushion on the floor in front of the table, as if someone spent a lot of time kneeling there, and the table itself was a mess of melted wax, the bones of small animals, and several knives and elaborate daggers that were scattered across the filthy surface in a haphazard way.
What did you find, Eddie?
Nyla May asked as she shook the feathers out of a purple pillow she had slashed open. I think this is what we've been looking for, I said as I stepped into the room and picked up a yellowed piece of paper that was laid in the center of the altar. I couldn't read the writing on it, but I sure as shit recognized the mark at the bottom. The mark on the bottom of the page was Ursinger's signature, and just under Ursinger's mark was the symbol of a pyramid with circles drawn at the end of all three points.